Hey them friends, hope you are ready for the next item. That is the short Dhamma sermon. Nowadays we are discussing Satisampajanya Sutta. This is available in Anguttara Nikaya, where the facts are grouped according to the available number. So if there are two facts, then it is in the second chapter or second nipata. And if there are three facts, then it is in the third nipata. If there are four facts, then it is in the fourth nipata, likewise. Now, this Satisampajanya Sutta is in the eighth nipata, so that we can assume that it has eight stages, so eight facts. So, eight steps in this situation. Now, in this Satisampajanya Sutta, therefore, Buddha explains the culmination of various internal qualities, spiritual qualities, starting with mindfulness and clear comprehension. As you can see from the diagram, so it starts with mindfulness and clear comprehension. So it is good information for all of us, because sometimes we feel that first of all we need to develop morality, and then only we have to develop concentration, and then only we have to develop wisdom. So that's a kind of a linear model that we sometimes familiar with. But now here Buddha comes up with another method where one can start even with mindfulness. One start to develop mindfulness, and then Buddha's teaching, various techniques are allowing us to further develop the clear comprehension. And that is how typically the kammatthana, the various meditation objects, are well designed. And then mindfulness and clear comprehension go hand in hand. And as a result, moral shame and moral dread coming into being. So if one has mindfulness and clear comprehension, so then Buddha says, the hiri and ottappa, moral shame and moral dread, have the proximate cause. So if one maintains kind of a very polite or very sort of morality. So actually the morality comes later also in a quite advanced manner. But here idea is the very basic level of moral shame and moral dread is available since his mind is now fairly calm, quiet. And more than that, it is mindful and clearly knowing. Because one feels that oneself. So self-awareness is available. So one feels oneself. One feels about one's mind. And then Buddha mentioned, when moral shame and moral dread is there, so the restraint and of the sense faculties become evident. Because one may feel that I should not use my eyes for something unsuitable. I should not use my ears for something not suitable. My nose should not be used for something unsuitable. So likewise, one start to guard one's senses. Because one may understand the mind has to be protected. Mind is now becoming more and more sensitive, fairly concerned about one's healthy being, fairly improving one's self-awareness. So as a result, one starts to feel that the senses has to be guarded. So as a result, when one guarding the senses, then Buddha mentions that virtuous behavior, sila, going to be improved. So indriya sangvare sati, indriya sangvara sampannassa upanisa sampanno hoti sila. So that is number three, where when there is restraint of the sense faculties, for one who experiences restraint of sense faculties, virtuous behavior possesses its proximate cause. So here the virtuous behavior, that is the sila, become available, because there are enough proximate causes are available for it to sustain. So one's morality become improved. So one may use one's words carefully, and one may behave properly using one's own body. So mainly the body and the speech are quite restrained, and one is quite careful about how one's speech and the body being used. and one does not want to harm oneself, and the others using the body and the speech. So one is fairly considerate about the situation. How I am going to use the senses? How I am going to use my speech? How am I going to use my body? So one is quite careful about it. And as a result, that indicates that one's morality has the proximate causes to sustain. It is not that you just observe sila for a day and then completely forget about it. Rather, slowly, sila becomes part of your life. So you feel it. You feel that in the closed couple of weeks, so I am being sort of maintaining my morality. I am quite considerate of how I am using my words, speech, and the body. So one can even be a little happy that I am now quite becoming a good person. Previously, I didn't concern about these points, these matters, but now I am little considerate about this. Now I am little concerned about this. So in the immediate past, once you look back, you feel happy. That's a behavioral change has happened in yourself. And you quite happy about it and you appreciate it because this is something difficult. Because typically our minds are tends to go here and there and enjoy senses. And that is what we sort of indicate as that we are rich. That is, as much as possible, we can look at what we want, what we like. As much as possible, we can listen to what we want, what we like. As much as possible, we can sense various incense. We can taste various delicious food. We can have good contact. So this is what we feel as the freedom. This is what we feel as the sort of the richness, luxurious life. And all these things are the typical norms. But now, one goes against the grain and one understands it is not that merely gratifying senses brings the happiness. Rather, there is another alternative. By calming down senses, by restraining one's senses, and by maintaining proper sila, morality, still one can be happy. Still one can be contented. So then Buddha mentioned, so this is how the sila comes to the picture. And sila sati, sila sampannasa, upanisa sampanno hoti samma samadhi. So samma samadhi becomes available when the sila, morality is there. Actually, in certain other suttas, some sub parts are also there, certain other sub steps are also mentioned that when sila is there, morality is there, one feels that one is deserving some further development because one feels that confident. One has become a good person. So you feel that you are a good person and you are doing good for yourself and you are doing good for the others. So you deserve something more in your spiritual path. So this kind of a positive atmosphere being developed in the mind. So that generates little happiness. Mild happiness in the mind. Once that is developed, so that makes you more happy, even more contented. Even rapture can arise. So when your body and the mind is quite happy, calm, relaxed, contented, so that means you are enjoying some happiness, contentment. So that makes the mind concentrated. So this is why, this is how the morality causes to generate concentration. This is how the morality causes to generate the collectedness of the mind. Because you feel that you deserve it. You feel that you are worthy of it. Because you are leading a good life, moral life. And you are somewhat protected through the sila. And then you feel happy. When the mind is happy, that becomes a proximate cause for the mind to be integrated or mind to be fairly collected, fairly concentrated. So this concentration, this samadhi becomes available. So when samadhi is available, then Buddha mentioned samma samadhim hi sati. සම්මා සමාධි සම්පන්නස්ස උපනිෂ සම්පන්නෝ හෝති යථා භූත ඥාන දස්සන. Now, just the merely available of samadhi does not lead to the availability of this yathābhūta jñāna dassana, seeing things as they truly are. Rather, we have to use this concentration properly to investigate. So, assume that you are using anapanasati. Say you are able to maintain your attention on so many breaths in line. Continuously, you can maintain such a mindfulness. And Buddha does not stop us there. There Buddha requests us to further scrutinize, further say, investigate what is in your hand. Further investigate this object, what is under your scrutiny, what is under your very nose. So now we have to examine the object. We have to examine the phenomena. We have to investigate the phenomena. Then only the Dhamma Vichaya develops. Then only the wisdom starts to develop. Then only we get the proper perspective about what is really going on. So therefore, this investigation is extremely important. So the just establishment of mindfulness is not enough. So one now has to try to see clearly, to investigate things very clearly. So this is something that we have to purposely initiate. The mind may not do it. Mind may feel lethargic in doing that. Mind may feel that it is somewhat difficult. And even when you start it, mind may start to scatter, distract. And again, mind might say that it's difficult and I can't do it. The information is not available. So likewise, so many excuses might be told by the mind. But you are maintaining a sort of very effortful attitude, that you are not giving up. You are trying to examine whatever the phenomena on which that you are mindful very closely. Then you are able to get more understanding. You are able to see it properly in many different angles. Say how it is looks like. How does it behave? Is it a single thing? Or is it an accumulation of so many things? So what are the starting points? How it behaves? And how it begins? What are the causes for it to arise? So likewise, many different ways that you are now examining it. So that is what we call as yathābhūta jñāna dassana. We are... One may see things as they truly are. Because typically, what happens is when we are observing something, we may get some influence towards that object itself. So that is true. At the same time, we are adding our own components. We have our own likes and dislikes. As a result, the picture, the experience becomes somewhat colored, somewhat biased, based on our own preconceived ideas, based on our own conditioning, likes and dislikes. So therefore, we may not get the complete picture or we may not get the correct picture. It's a kind of a biased picture, kind of a deformed picture that we are observing. But once we are balancing ourselves, once we are able to remove that our conditioning part, then only we can see the correct picture. Then only the objective picture, objective information is available. Once we have removed this subjective experience, now the objective experience is available. So this is where we are getting more and more closer to the reality. So now you are able to see things as they truly are. So you are not doing any kind of fabrication. You are not doing any kind of molding. You are not doing any kind of say preparations. Rather, you allow things to be. You are not trying to interfere with it. Rather, you allow things to be and you are closely examining it, carefully examining it, even without allowing your mind to distract. You are maintaining such a balance, very delicate balance, in order to examine what is really going on. And this is where we get the proper understanding. This is where we get the true picture. So what are these various phenomena? How they are behaving? Are they really a single thing or are they manifest as a single thing? So what, how many sort of manifestations are there? Minute kind of manifestations are there. So you are more and more, you are examining it, clearly knowing it, and you are even narrowing down your focus, trying to focus on a very limited area, and even to examine this minute detail, how each and every minute phenomena behaves. So this is where very refined mindfulness is developed, very refined clear comprehension is developed, and you are get a very deep kind of an understanding about the very phenomena. Because typically our mind simply do some kind of a surface glancing. You are not penetrating, you are not going inside. Rather, it remains at the surface level. It's a kind of superficial understanding that we all have. But now with the Buddha's teaching, with this sort of training, one is training one's mind to penetrate, to see clearly, to examine what is really going on with a very unbiased attitude. You are not trying to add anything to the picture. You are simply observing it. You become a kind of a very silent observer. You simply witness in the show. You are simply witnessing the phenomena. You are simply witnessing the process. You are not trying to interfere with it. You have a very non-judgmental attitude and you are examining it. So this is when that we are getting the correct perspective. This is when we are getting the proper picture, true picture of the situation. So this is what we call Yathabhuta Jnana Dasana. So this Yathabhuta Jnana Dasana fairly contains the knowledge of impermanence. So whatever phenomena under your scrutiny constantly shows impermanence. It cannot remain the same even for a second. Constantly it arises and passes away. So its vulnerable nature is apparent to you. So now you understand it's not permanent, it's constantly changing, it is so transient. So it is constantly subject to change. So this kind of a proper perspective, this sort of a insight knowledge is now developing in yourself. Similarly, you will understand, okay, constantly this, whatever the process, whatever the phenomena is oppressed by this sort of arising and passing away. It is constantly going through that sort of a suffering. So how I can expect lasting happiness from this sort of a situation? It's impossible. Because on the next moment, things have changed. Again, at the next moment, things have changed. Nothing remains constant. Everything is so vulnerable, and everything is rapidly changing. So this helps to further enhance your vipassana knowledges. So now the dispassion arises. Now you will understand the true picture. So therefore Buddha mentioned, Yathabhuta Jnana Dasane Sati, Yathabhuta Jnana Dasana Sampannassa, Upanisa Sampanno Hoti Nibbida Virago. So now the dispassion and the disenchantment going to arise. Because you have seen the true picture. You liked it, you want to own it, you want to possess it. Because you didn't know about the true picture. You thought that it is beautiful. You thought that it is really worthy. You thought that it is permanent. You thought that I have more control over it. I can be satisfied with it. And there is something substantial in it. So this is how we were thinking. But now, with the true picture, or the understanding of things as they truly are, now, kind of a opposite going to happen in the mind. Because now you have seen the correct picture. Nothing is hidden now. Everything is available. So you are seeing the very naked picture as it is. So no any kind of wrapping papers. There are no hidden kind of a wrapper. So you are seeing the real nature of the thing. So it is coreless, there is no essence, nothing substantial, nothing is under your control, is constantly subject to change, and it is constantly arising and passing away, utterly transient. So all these information, all these insights are quite eye-opening. And this eye-opening insights are now helping us to disenchant the whole process, to develop disenchantment about the whole process. So it is not that you are trying to force yourself to give up, rather very understanding, this very honest and say unbiased understanding of the phenomena helps us to detach from them. Now you don't feel much use of this whole thing. Nothing is worthy of grasping. Now the mind starts to let go. Now the dispassion arises. You don't need to want it. You don't need to desire for it. You don't need to cry for that. You simply allow it to happen. You simply let it go. So the yathābhūta jñāna dassane sati, yathābhūta jñāna dassana sampannassa, upanisa sampanno hoti nibbidā virogo. Now the dispassion and the nibbidā, the disenchantment going to arise in your mind. So this is how Buddha explained the different stages, how our mind develops in this spiritual path. So with that note, I'd like to conclude today's short Dhamma sermon. Now I open the session for questions.
Sorry, Bhante, there are currently 5 questions. Question number 1, sitting mindfulness. Dear Venerable Bhante, now I completely go to the place where there is empty, directly, as soon as I rest or sit down. In that, I get sanya or perception of various things. These are of my past life, war times in the world, etc. Can you please instruct me how not to get absorbed to these sanya? Your advice is much appreciated. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Actually, we can't be sure that these are related to the past life or these are merely mind-made illusions. So that is where we go wrong. So we may give various interpretations. We think it is so beautiful and we think it is more important. And again, we think that this is our past life. So this is an interpretation that we give. So this is your own definition. So there is no way to verify it. So you can say that I did it in a proper manner. I went step by step. I followed this particular meditation method. So likewise, you can give many, many excuses or many sort of valid answers, but still not sure. So therefore, don't give much value to any of these images, because you may understand that your eyes are closed. So once your eyes are closed, so what is visible is completely mind-made. So all these mind-made phenomena, all these mind-made images, Buddha called them as sanya. And sanya is, Buddha use an analogy to a mirage. So you know, once you see a mirage, so there is no water there, but it appears like water. Similarly, Buddha mentioned, all the perceptions, all the signs, marks, they appear like true, they appear like correct, they appear like various people, various persons, individuals. But in our mind, they are merely sort of images. So these images we are now trying to personify. We are trying to add value. We are trying to give value. So this is where we go wrong. So if we clearly know that they are merely images, mind images, so they come due to causes. They come because I was attached to something. I have sort of given value to it. That's why they are coming. Now you are maintaining kind of a dispassionate attitude towards these sanya, towards these various images. So then you are not getting deluded by it. As a result, it simply fades away. As a result, it goes away. And Buddha mentioned sanya virattasa na santi gantha. When the mind is fairly sort of not being agitated by these perceptions. and the mind is somewhat protected, not interested about these various images, various sanya, various marks, then there is less possibility of that mind getting involved with them. And mind getting involved with them and creating a big story, long story out of it. So that is being avoided, that is being stopped, because you are not much interested about these various images. So you understand they as mirage. So if you approach like this, then these stories may simply fade away. It may not last for a long time. And you can again have a quite spacious mind, a mind free from various sanya, various perceptions. So this is where we need to sort of divert our attention, properly maintain our attention. So that way you can overcome the present problem. Yeah.
Question number 2 of 7. This is walking mindfulness. Venerable Bhante, when I do walking practice, I focus on the sole of my foot. During the last session, after about 5 rounds of naming left, right, and focusing on the sole, I started feeling the touch of my heel on the hard wooden floor and then the pressure upwards from the floor due to my weight. The pressure transferred around the outside edge of the foot and just below the little toe, which was the first one that touched the ground. Gradually, pressure transferred across the sole towards the ball of the foot while toes touched the ground, one after the other, toes, and finally the big toe. The big toe then pushed the body, taking the weight completely and transferring to the other leg for a similar pattern. After 5 to 6 rounds of continuous mindful walking, I started getting more details on this process, such as how the sole and the toes touch the ground, push and swell partly against the floor due to weight, cold, and warm sides of the toes, how they come out from the floor with the lift of the foot, intensity of the impact, etc., etc. After about 15 to 20 minutes of walking, these details faded away and I could only feel the impact of the foot on the ground and the pressure upwards. Some cold and hot sensations as coming from the lower part of my body or foot. I could not pinpoint from where they are coming or the place. I could walk like this for 20 to 30 minutes. Sometimes my mind wandered off, which I knew and ascertained by not feeling these sensations, and then realized that I was on thoughts. Once this realization comes of being not mindful, I started feeling the walking process again, impact of the foot on the ground, some cold and hot sensations, etc. So I could confirm that the mind came back to the walking naturally. This is the experience and reflection of my 1 hour mindful walking practice. Thank you, Bhante. That's the end.
You may continue, because even when your mind getting distracted, you are somewhat aware of it and you are not completely derailed by it. Rather, you simply be mindful about it. And this is in a way a better approach, because you are not trying to immediately remove it. So the typical beginner's approach is that we are trying to immediately remove it and trying to keep your attention on the breath, immediately take your attention and keeping on your foot, because you are not confident that you can handle those thoughts. But now you have made a good try where you are being aware of various thoughts, but you are not trying to immediately revert back to the primary object. Rather, you are now somewhat maintaining your attention, maintaining your mindfulness with arising various thoughts. So this is how we have to be face to face with thoughts. And here, if you are properly applying the clear comprehension, proper understanding, then slowly these thoughts may fade away and you will understand, okay, they are not permanent. They also have the nature to come and go, and they are not really sort of substantial, solid. Rather, they can be dismantled to many minor or small kind of thoughts, emotions, feelings, etc. So likewise, more and more you properly see it, then more than simple, say, mindfulness, you are getting more proper understanding towards mindfulness. understanding coupled with mindfulness, clear comprehension coupled with mindfulness. So therefore you are doing good, so you can continue.
Question number 3 of 10, general question. Dear Bhante, last time you explained that you don't support regimented programs and the practice has to be non-strenuous and flexible. For a newcomer, this approach can be welcoming and appealing. However, once you get established in practice, my experience is regimented practices help immensely to go beyond some thresholds our thinking minds impose. I can recall my first retreat with Venerable Dhammajiva in Brisbane, which was not a pleasing one at least during the 3 to 4 days. The timetable started at 4 a.m. and we had back-to-back walking and sitting 1 hour sessions at least 5 sets a day. Noble silence was strictly imposed and virtually you are on your own sleeping in a small room following the timetable with hundreds of others similar in your situation. You have to get up at 3:30 a.m., no meals and any solids after 12 noon, and strictly adhere to the timetable. Due to body discomfort, fully on timetable and noble silence to the strictest level, I felt like lost and going home from day one. But due to Venerable Dhammajiva's encouragement and the effect of being among the crowd, I could overcome all the issues after the 5th day and continue 11 days. At the end of the retreat, most of us did not feel like ending the retreat and going home. My question is, if you give more than necessary comfort and freedom to the thinking mind to shape the practice, how can we overcome the mind-made barriers? My personal opinion is every serious practitioner should taste and endure a regimented practice at some point. With all the respect at your disposal, with metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, I agree with you because initially our hindrance power is extremely powerful. So our hindrances are extremely powerful. So in order to break it, so we need a fair amount of effort. We need fair amount of dedicated practice. So otherwise we may simply give it up. Otherwise we may simply get up and walk. So either on such situation, this sort of a regimentation, so a strict following of the schedule may be quite useful. But as I mentioned, so as you are growing up, so you are now expanding your mindfulness. You are trying to integrate mindfulness to your life. So that way, so you need some amount of flexibility to allow the mind to grow. So if you do unnecessary regimentation, then mind feels somewhat blocked. Mind feel like caged. Mind feel like restricted. So this is where we need to find the balance. So at the beginning, definitely you have to go for some strict retreat so that you can break the initial barriers. And once you are somewhat developed and once you feel that you are somewhat confident that you yourself have the, desire to practice, you yourself have the motivation towards the practice, then you can have some flexibility in your practice. Yeah.
Question number 4 of 9, I think. Sitting mindfulness. Dear Bhante, I've been practicing mindfulness for a couple of years now. I find it easier to calm down and watch my thoughts rather than walking or sitting practice. I notice details of the thoughts arising and fading away, and I can comfortably do this. However, because the general advice is to practice walking and sitting, I have tried that as well. I notice that when I try to do sitting and watching and watch the breath, breathing becomes uncomfortable. Is there any way that I can overcome this? Please give any advice on how I can improve my sitting practice. Much merits. That's the end of the question.
Chatu, could you repeat the first part? Oh, you are muted.
Sorry. I have been practicing mindfulness for a couple of years now. I find it easier to calm down and watch my thoughts rather than walking or sitting practice. I notice details of the thoughts arising and fading away, and I can comfortably do this.
Yeah, fine. So basically, if you are now confident in being aware of thoughts and you feel that you are not being carried away by the thoughts, no problem. You can continue with it because certain, say, characters are there. So they improve with Chittanupassana, Dhammanupassana quite easily. And it is not necessary to spend years on practicing Kayanupassana, Vedananupassana. So it depends on different characters, different people. So therefore, we can't generalize this principle. Anyway, since now you are quite confident of watching the mind and being aware of various thoughts without being deluded by them, so you can continue like that.
Question number 5 of 9. This is a theory question. Dear Bhante, is there a difference between Samma Samadhi and Samadhi in Sila Samadhi Panya? Appreciate if you could explain. Thank you. Much merits. That's the end of the question.
We can say like this. Actually, Samadhi in general, when we are talking, it has many different aspects. But when we are talking about Samma Samadhi, so that is where we are talking it as a path factor. Probably you might have heard that the 37 Bodhipakkhiya Dhammas, 37 factors of awakening, we can say. So there it starts with the four foundations of mindfulness, Kayanupassana, Vedananupassana, Chittanupassana, Dhammanupassana, and then leads leading towards the Iddipada, then four Padang Virya, where you are having great efforts, and then five indriya, five faculties, then five bala, five powers, five spiritual powers, and then seven enlightenment factors, and ultimately comes to the Noble Eightfold Path. In the Noble Eightfold Path, we call the Samadhi as the Samma Samadhi. So therefore, it's a somewhat matured kind of a Samadhi. So, but beforehand, you are experiencing many levels of Samadhi. So therefore, one can't say that from my beginning of the practice, I am developing Samma Samadhi. Because Samma Samadhi is where we are calling it as the path factor, as a path factor. But say you are in the Kayanupassana level, where your concentration is quite narrow and focused to a breath. That is also a Samadhi, but we can't say it is Samma Samadhi. A kind of a bare attention. This is where you are simply allowing the mind to calm down and simply being aware of in-breath, being aware of out-breath. So likewise, you are maintaining some bare attention, so instantaneous concentration, and that may further improve. And it might improve onto the concentration side itself, or it can maintain or improve towards the clearly knowing side, vipassana side. So both are possible. Both possibilities are there. And as you develop more into the vipassana side, so then the concentration becomes somewhat collectedness. It is not that you are too much interested about very deep concentrations, but now you are interested about maintaining clarity of mind, some purity of mind. So you have a collectedness of your mind so that you can clearly see things as they truly are. I mean, if you are in a very deep concentration like absorptions, then that is somewhat distraction at this level because your mind is stopped there or your mind being hindered there, your mind being locked there. But now in the vipassana practice, you are maintaining some amount of concentration. Sometimes it is necessary to see clearly things in a very narrow perspective, in a very sort of a minimal experience. But on the other hand, you have the broader perspective, wider perspective. That is also there. So both situations, you have the concentration. So you have the what you call the minimized approach and you have the maximized approach. You have the minimalistic view and the sort of the maximum view. So therefore, the concentration is evolving factor. And as you are moving towards the, say, Bodhjanga. So there Buddha mentioned at the Bodhjanga level, that is called Samadhi Sambodhjanga. So there the concentration is where, so this observation happens in a sort of undisturbed manner. So your mind is fairly mindful, and you do proper investigation, Dhamma Vichaya is there, and you are maintaining a balanced effort, Virya Sambojjhanga is there, and as a result, your mind is quite happy because things are happening properly, and you feel sort of lighter in your body and your mind, and as a result, you feel quite contented. As a result, you feel concentrated. So you can see here the, say, Samadhi Sambojjhanga is a kind of a result of previous enlightenment factors, awakening factors. And when it comes to the, say, Samma Samadhi, so even further developed in a more mature perspective, in a more mature way, rather than to a very focused attention, now you are even maintaining a mind with a very relaxed attitude. It is not that you are blocked in a kind of a cage. You are not trying to keep your mind in a cage, in a cell. Rather, you are aware of your mind. So the mind becomes very clean, clear, and even a single drop of kilesa, a drop of defilement is quite visible to you. So there, the concentration is very much sometimes called as samahita. Not the samadhi, it is very much sometimes called as samahita. So the mind becomes somewhat transparent, like it is not covered. So your mind has very good clarity. So that whatever even a minute defilement arising, you are aware of it because the clarity is there in the mind. So therefore, likewise, the samadhi has a kind of evolving nature, starts with very narrow kind of concentration, but later it matures and expands and going to the samma samadhi. Yeah.
Question number 6 of 9. This one has two parts, and first one is walking mindfulness. Avasarai Bhante. Despite doing this program for a while now, walking meditation has been quite difficult, much more than sitting meditation. This is because, in my opinion, due to the fact that my mind tends to wander away more in walking meditation, much more. I do feel myself improving, but sometimes I feel stuck. What is your advice for my current predicament, Bhante?
Yeah, I mean, it may be true because walking meditation appears a little difficult compared to the sitting meditation, because in a sitting meditation, you are maintaining a very strict atmosphere, closed eyes, and in a very silent environment. So likewise, but in a walking environment, you have to keep your eyes open and the various sounds, sights are available. So amidst all these difficulties, you are trying to maintain your attention on your foot. So that is the challenge. So this challenge only will be successful that after your training. So therefore, don't worry. So this is common to everyone. At the beginning, walking meditation is difficult. But once you are successful, you may definitely enjoy walking meditation even than sitting meditation. So therefore, don't worry. You may continue.
This is second part of that report, sitting mindfulness. My sitting meditation has become better over these past couple of months, but I have changed the meditation quite a bit from when I started. In the beginning, I used to let the body relax and stay with the body and then go to my breath, which has already calmed down, and be with the breath, but not too concentrated on it. I feel more like observing my entire body and breath from the outside looking in. This led to my breath calming down and to the point where it seems non-existent. My body decided to panic, but I stay with it, and it feels like taming a wild bull until I feel my breath again and begin the cycle again. But now I have tried to change it where, instead of looking at my whole breath and body through an outsider's perspective, I have become more inquisitive on the breath, and I have begun to see, like Bhante mentions, the rising, then the emptiness, the falling, and again the emptiness before it starts again. Is my old way good, or is my new method better? Or are both methods the same? Thank you, Bhante, for your advice. With metta, that's the end.
I think the new method is also good, because now you are in a sort of a very focused way. Now you have very clear comprehension, and now you are trying even to see the causes, say when breath starts, how it is starting. So what are the qualities that you can feel? And there you are maintaining a very good restrainment and very precise attention to breath, and now trying to understand about it. Assume that at a given time that you feel a little tired and kind of a tension arising in your mind, because you have to very accurately focus your mind. So these kind of things happen. Then you can come back to the old method. Now you are having a sort of an overview of your whole body, and you have a kind of expanded mindfulness. So this is possible. So likewise, both are available. But in the new approach, now you are trying to see even the causes, as you are now seeing the beginning of the breath, beginning of the out-breath, beginning of the emptiness, etc. So now there's a fairly good potential to go even more to subtle aspects of the breathing and to the, say, some good insights in the practice. So therefore, keep it in that manner.
Question number 7 of 10. This is a general question, and they put a little introduction. They do 15 minutes of walking and 30 minutes of sitting daily. Dear Bhante, I have been practicing mindfulness for nearly 10 years. Especially, I am trying to find liking and disliking in the mind during different moments and the daily activities. I can keep a distance from the thoughts sometimes. Recently, I have listened to your talk about impermanence. Bhante, could you please explain how to incorporate impermanence, anicca anupassana, to mindfulness practice? Does one have to do anything in particular for this impermanence practice, or does it arise naturally? Everyone, Saranai, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, it may arise naturally, but as I said before, you have to try to clearly observe phenomena, various phenomena. So mere maintenance of mindfulness is not sufficient, but rather you have to connect with the clear comprehension. So onto which that you are being mindful, onto whatever the phenomena that you are being mindful. So that phenomena has to be very carefully observed, carefully investigated. So that further investigation will lead to the understanding of impermanence. So it's a kind of a natural evolvement. So at the beginning, you are establishing mindfulness, and then you are now trying to inquire about it, investigate about it. Now you are getting sort of many different aspects available to you. You are able to see various details, and more and more you see more details. It may slowly switch to the common characteristics. So there you are understanding the impermanence. So then you will understand everything is impermanent. It is not a single thing. Even the bodily phenomena, even the, say, element characteristics, elements, and say, feelings, thoughts, etc., etc. So whatever you are paying attention, you appear like very transient. So therefore, so nothing to worry. So you seems to be in the correct path, correct approach. So more you are clearly observing things and investigating, so that will naturally switch to the understanding of the impermanence.
Question number 8 of 10. This is a follow-up question from earlier, which is about sanya. Dear Venerable Bhante, can you explain a bit more slowly again how to not get absorbed to sanya, please? By doing what, will the importance of sanya disappear? Sorry to ask again. Your advice much appreciated. With metta, that's the end.
Explain slowly. So that's why, I mean, say, typically our minds are filled with so much of sanya. So we are, say, we have learned so many things. At our kindergarten, we are being introduced to various colors. And on the first grade, maybe we are introduced to various calculations, adding, distracting, and then various names, fruits, vegetables, countries. So likewise, so we are adding more and more sanya. And then at the 5th grade, 10th grade, at the advanced level, so we are improving or adding so much of sanya. And assume that you are going to the university. You are packing yourself with sanya filling yourself with sanya. And so much so, those are the ones that we purposely included. And at the same time, while we are living with others, so much of other information going to happen in the mind. And you are watching movies, watching the TV, watching the, say, news, so much of sanya. So ultimately, your mind is filled with sanya, corrupted with sanya. So your mind is fairly congested with so much of signs. So with the meditation, actually, we are trying to answer this kind of a corrupted mind, corrupted with signs. And those signs are now fairly sedimented. Your mind being conditioned by these sanya, these perceptions. But the practice helps us to unentangle this whole process. So immediately it may not happen, but as you are simplifying the practice, as you are simplifying your experience, say, for example, you are simply keeping your attention onto the body and you are trying to calm down yourself. You ignore all the thoughts, various thoughts happening related to the past, you simply ignore. It may be quite useful, it may be a very interesting memory, but you simply ignore it. And related to the future, it may be a very creative idea, a very good plan, but we simply postpone, we simply drop it, we simply leave it aside. So likewise, more and more you are establishing yourself in the present moment, so we are cutting off a fair amount of sanya. It may be happen purposely, we are doing it purposely, true, but we need to do that purposely at the beginning. So assume that now you have established on mindfulness in the present moment. Now you start to investigate the proper behavior of whatever the phenomena. So that actually leads to develop wisdom. So that wisdom, as we discussed today, helps to generate dispassion, disenchantment. So it happens to the present moment, whatever the phenomena. Assume that you are watching various, say, feelings. So now these feelings appear like sort of faded away. Previously, you are going after all the pleasurable feelings. But now you don't feel much motivated to go after them. Previously, you are so considerable about various painful feelings. But now you can be patient with them. Previously, you didn't even understand or know any equanimous feeling, but you can now clearly know them. So likewise, some understanding happens in yourself related to the, say, feelings I am taking here as an example. Now, more you have this understanding, now these all feelings appear like blurred, appear like common. You lose the interest. They all appear like same. So this is where the perception going to change. And more and more you develop, now feelings are there, but you are not interested. You feel bored about them. Even a pleasurable sensation feeling comes, you are not too much attached to it. Even a painful feeling happens, you are not that disturbed with it. So likewise, you now have your own independence. You are gaining your own potential. You are gaining your own strength. Your mind is now becoming independent. So this is how, so your inner strength being developed. At the same time, all those perceptions are losing their strength. So now you are no more a victim of those perceptions, those signs. And even when those signs are available coming to the mind, now you are facing with them. You are not afraid of them. You know they are proper picture. You know that they are merely perceptions. You know that they are merely signs. They are not true. They are a mirage. They all are signs. They all are a kind of a storage, images. So you are not giving much value to those images. You are not trying to attach a person to it. You are not trying to personify these images. So this is a kind of a gradual process happening with the mindfulness practice. Yeah.
Question number 9 of 10. This is sitting mindfulness. Venerable Sir, I can't develop in my practice. My breath is subtle at the nose, only observable in stomach rising and falling. If I also have social anxiety in life, should I practice metta to overcome it? If so, how long sitting per day, and how, since I have heard a few different ways? I keep 5 precepts as well, consistently, so I'm not sure where anxiety is coming from. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I mean, nowadays, because of these various situations, this kind of a mind state can happen. One thing is that you can do more than sitting, you can do some walking. You can, if possible, you can go to a nearby park and have a good walk. Try to connect with the nature and don't feel isolated. Like to sort of, if you have a chance, have a little face-to-face chat with another person and say, look at the sky during the night time and try to connect with the nature and try to connect with yourself as well. So these are, I mean, nowadays because of this social distancing and all these health precautions, so we are being restricted, so much restricted. So it actually can lead to sort of even depression in our mind. But the practice, which if we do somewhat regimented practice, that also can lead to some, say, bad repercussions into wrong directions. So therefore, we need to find balance. So how much we can bear today? How much is enough for today? So assume that you are taking some medicine. So you have to maintain the proper dose. Similarly, in the practice also, especially in vipassana, so you take some time. Don't be in a hurry. So do it in a very gentle manner so that your mind can bear with it. And consider it like drinking medicine, taking medicine. And if you maintain such balance, then you can enjoy it. And time to time, as you said, if you feel, you can introduce some metta or Buddha Anusati, especially Buddha Anusati. Also, good meditation to motivate yourself to have good faith and to sort of to generate sort of a lighter feeling in yourself. And that is another approach. Yeah.
Question number 10. This is the last one. General question. Dear Bhante, thank you for your guidance. I would like to ask about developing dispassion as a layperson. With more practice, I feel dispassionate towards activities in my life. For example, I no longer want to acquire more materials, live luxuriously, take any alcoholic drinks, etc. However, when there are parties, social events, or even family events, it is harder to refrain from such activities. How can one go out in society and maintain relationships and continue to be dispassionate? Many thanks. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, I think this is where we need to be a little flexible. So it is true that we become dispassionate and the practice itself is sort of motivating that kind of an attitude. But at the same time, we have to be a little sympathetic about our family members, about our friends, about our situations. And without losing ourselves, without really disturbing our practice, if we can maintain the situation, that is much better. Assume that that you are not going to every party as you doing before, for example, but assume that there's a very essential one. Then you may go there and try to be with the others and share your sort of situation. And once you come back again back to the proper path. So sometimes we need to do little sacrifice, not complete giving up the whole thing, but rather just for the sake of maintaining the relationship, just for the sake of doing your, say, fulfilling your obligation that you are doing it. And that way, actually, we have to maintain some sort of a balance. And on the other hand, time to time being with others also very useful. Otherwise, you don't know about where you are. Sometimes we overestimate ourselves. And being with others helps to understand where we are. what are our mistakes and what are the areas that we still have to develop, what are our shortcomings. So this is being sort of evident to us when we are associating others. So therefore, so keep it kind of a occasion, kind of an opportunity for you to develop, and rather than thinking that it has a quite difficult or kind of a problem, take it as a challenge. How even among others, how even can you be mindful? How you can watch your mind? How your mind is reacting while being with the others? So likewise, improve yourself in that manner. Yeah. Okay, Chatu.
Bhante, there's one more follow-up question. Is it okay to go over time?
Okay, a couple of minutes only.
All right, I'll be quick. Follow-up question number two. Dear Venerable, is about Sanya. Dear Venerable Bhante, thank you so much for explaining the question on Sanya. I don't watch TV as practice. I do go to emptiness straight away. Bhante, why does someone get incorrect Sanya? A perception, is perception not in present? And why am I getting absorbed? This is because of something I am doing wrong. With metta, that's the end of the question.
No, I mean, that's why, I mean, Buddha mentioned perception, all this sanya become anusaya. Sanya anusenti. So more we take various visuals through our eyes, various sounds through our ears, sense many sensations through our body, etc. Some part of them become somewhat collected, somewhat stored in our mind. So that is where we store them. And our thinking become conditioned by those perceptions then. So our mind be conditioned to look at in that angle. We are imposing that sort of perception into the picture. So our behavior become conditioned with this picture. Now this is where we need to carefully recognize these perceptions. So are they really true? Or are they really mind-made? Are they really coming from my own? Is it a kind of a perception that I have added? So likewise, we have to be completely honest, completely humble in order to understand those kind of perceptions. It is not a mistake, by the way. I mean, it is not that we accumulated all these things within this life. So we may have many different perceptions coming from the past, and those are being somewhat stored or sedimented in our minds. So more our mind become open, relaxed, mindful, then there's a possibility for them to come to the surface. Then we are recognizing them. But now we are not driven by them. We are not being deluded by them. But we know they are merely signs. They are merely perceptions. And we then allow them to go. So likewise, we have to cure ourselves. We have to heal ourselves. So don't think them as a problem, rather an opportunity for you to heal yourself. Yeah.
That concludes the session, and that was the last question. I would like to pass our thanks and gratitude and merits to Bhante for giving up valuable time for this program. Also to the people behind the scene, organizers, seen and unseen, helping this program and also participating, as well as the people on this call, because without you, there would be no program. So with that, I'd like to end the program. Therewan Saranai.
Yeah, Therewan Saranai.